Welcome to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio, a league of nations among other internet radio stations, Voices of the People United We Roar. Today is time for Dr. Barbara Holstein's program, Happiness for Women Only. Good afternoon, Dr. Holstein.
Good afternoon, Lillian. I'm so delighted to be back, and I have a great show lined up. We're going to talk about happiness for women only, and I'm going to have a great guest, Dr. Sandra Prince-Emery, on resiliency. We'll be continuing a discussion we started, which people can go back in the past weeks and hear the first section. And we're ready to go whenever you tell us we're ready to go. Well, I have a feeling that we've been told we're ready to go. So I'm going to say hello. I'm, again, Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein, positive psychologist and happiness coach, and welcome back to Happiness for Women Only. Let me tell you for just a brief couple of minutes about my work. I've been in private practice for over 25 years as a psychologist in the state of New Jersey. And along the way, I've conducted case study research on women who were not in my practice to see what the results were, to see through questioning them at great length what I could find out about women and the hidden messages that we carry from childhood all the way into adulthood. And indeed, boy, did I discover that we've got lots of messages filling our heads. But I also discovered something even more profound, and that was that women indeed do have a great capacity for happiness and pleasure. However, the underside of my discovery was I also discovered something that I think most of us know, and that is that this capacity is often thwarted by society at large. And even by us women ourselves. We get so caught up in the hustle and bustle of life, or we get criticized or put down, and there goes the happiness out the window, the bluebird of happiness. And often, as women, we return to this capacity not often enough, sometimes even in secret, because we don't know how to express our needs for happiness within our family or the context in which we live. So it's my mission to help women, and I'm going to include in this, of course, girls, return to their birthright of happiness and well-being as often as possible. That's why I teach about happiness all the time and write books on happiness. You can find all of my books on my website, enchantedself.com. I'm not going to take the time to really go through the books at this point, but they span a decade now, going from my first book, The Enchanted Self, A Positive Therapy, which came out even 2 years before the concept positive psychology was in common use, where I introduced to you how to achieve positive states of happiness and even retrain clinicians how to get their clients to find more happiness within their own histories and their present-day lives. So that's, I feel, my benchmark book, and I'd love for you to read it and write me, and we'll discuss it. I'm going to mention just briefly now my new book, which went to press last week. It will be out for sale April 15th. And that book is The Truth, My Secret Diary, I'm 10, I'm Smart, and I Know Everything. And this book will be very, very relevant as I talk to Dr. Sandra Prince-Emery today. I'm even going to be reading excerpts from the book that tie into Dr. Sandra Prince-Emery's expertise on the subject of resiliency, where she is really one of our national leaders. Let me just tell you very briefly a little bit about her before we continue our discussion. Sandra Prinzendry Embrary, doctor, is currently the director of the Resiliency Center of Allenhurst. She is a clinical psychologist and a marriage and family therapist. She's worked with women, families, teens, mothers and daughters in therapy for 25-plus years. She's the author of the Resiliency Scales for Children and Adolescents and also the Resiliency Scales for Adolescents. She has authored many articles in journals, including The Role of Identity Status in Women and Their Sphere of Influence. She's one of the seven mothers, founders of the Feminist Therapy Collective of Philadelphia, 1974, and which is now called the Women's Therapy Collective. And I am so thrilled to have you back, Dr. Sandra Prinzendry.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And I hope you don't mind. We'll call each other we'll call each other Barbara and Sandy if that works. Okay. And we have been talking on one of my last shows about the concept of resiliency and how it relates to women, of course. I'm wondering, I think it's really important, Sandy, if we step back for a few minutes and you update our audience again.
Okay.
Could you do that?
I'd be happy to. Basically, the model of resiliency that I write about and that I developed the scales to assess is a multi-dimensional and sort of a relational construct. In other words, it's not a one-dimensional construct. Resiliency, which may be defined as the ability to bounce back when one faces adversity, is composed of a lot of different personal qualities, and which personal quality comes into play depends upon the age of the person, depends upon the situation, and a number of other factors. So that's sort of the overall construct. So within that, the three concepts that I measure with the scales are three developmental principles, and I'm going to briefly touch on each of them because I think that it helps people get an anchor on resiliency, and it will help us in using the excerpts from your new book to illustrate some of these concepts. The three constructs of resiliency are sense of mastery, sense of relatedness, and emotional reactivity. The first two, sense of mastery and sense of relatedness, are both important, but they're different. Sense of mastery has more to do with one's optimism, one's self-efficacy, about belief in one's ability to do things well as adaptability, and that's the ability to learn from mistakes, and those things together constitute sense of mastery. Sense of relatedness, it has to do with whether a person perceives themselves as related, connected with others in meaningful ways. That's made up of a sense of trust, perceived access to support, comfort with others, and tolerance of others. The third construct is a little bit different, and it's emotional reactivity. And we all have some degree of emotional reactivity, and that is how easily aroused we are when we're presented with adversity or things that are upsetting. Emotional reactivity has different parts to it also. One is just your basic threshold or arousal, and some people are thin-skinned and some people are thick-skinned, and that's a physiological thing. The other component would be recovery time. Some of us get upset, but we come back, and it's over very quickly. for others it's not. The third part is how impaired we get when we're upset. And so that constitutes emotional reactivity. Now, I also talk about individuals' vulnerability as the discrepancy between the resources, which are sense of mastery and sense of relatedness, and emotional reactivity. However, that gets a little bit more technical and is used more for screening. I think we can just stick with the three basic constructs for now.
Good. I think if we stick with them and we use the girl I'm going to tell you about as an example, we can start to make these constructs very real. And I am assuming that we have within these constructs some factors that are pretty stationary within the disposition and the sort of predisposition of a person, while other factors have some capacity for growth and change and support.
Yes.
And so on.
Yes,
and
that's true.
That's really relevant to my new book because I have used one particular little girl between the ages of 10 and 11 and a half to be a prototype, a kind of archetype of all little girls. And of course, tons of little girls will like what she doesn't like and get upset by what she doesn't get upset about. But the overriding principle is that we can help people and we can help our children have more strength, have more courage, have more of a sense of hope, bearing in mind that everybody has kind of their set point too, that, you know, we're not going to completely change anyone, whether they're 10 or certainly kind of hard to change us too, you know. So, but there's a lot of room still in there. So this book, The Truth, My Secret Diary, I'm 10, I'm smart, and I know everything, I bring to women as a way to help them better understand and champion their own girls, nieces, daughters of friends, cousins, girlfriends, daughters, etc. And at the same time, I bring it to women as a wisdom book to help them become alive again, to recapture a lot of the inner threads of spontaneity, fun-loving, an ability to recoup from disappointments that most of us indeed certainly had when we were 10 to 11 and a half. And we have threads still. Some of us have tremendous capacities for fun at 40, 50, 60. Some of us really struggle. But the girl is out there as a beacon, bringing us back to a lot of that. So I would like to read to you, Sandy, and to our audience, one excerpt from the book that describes one of her situations that isn't really that great for her. Okay?
Sure.
All right. So in this book, she says, on this particular subject, she says, "Today my feelings were hurt. In class I raised my hand a lot. I have so many questions to ask. Miss Shannon was talking about the wheel and how it changed so many things in the world when it was invented. I raised my hand and asked what the world might have been like if something else had been invented instead of the wheel. She just looked at me with her really sharp gray eyes and said, 'Now, isn't that silly?' And then she turned to everyone else and asked them to think about other inventions that depend on the wheel. It bothers me that Miss Shannon doesn't like my questions. Sometimes she doesn't call on me at all, and I know she sees my hand waving. That makes me feel bad inside. But I don't give up. Even if I have a funny feeling around my heart when she ignores me, I still raise my hand the next time I have a question." So that's the excerpt.
Okay.
Can you chat a little bit with
me
about
absolutely.
It?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. That's a great excerpt. It touches on so many things. It touches on, I'll focus in on girlness and femaleness, although it applies to everyone, basically, the striving to ask questions, the wonderment about the world, this is all a part of the sense of mastery, getting a sense of mastery, and it's a motive towards competence. And it's that process of questioning and acquiring and checking the world out that leads to understanding and having a sense of mastery. And it's one's belief that that's an okay process, too, that nurtures a sense of mastery. So the interaction that this girl has with her teacher sort of epitomizes a negative thing that can happen in that the adult or the environment can respond negatively to that whole process and the construct that is so embedded in that process. And in some cases, it can be a deadening, and it can be a mastery, a confidence deflating result when teachers or other people or other adults do that. Even though it may be innocent and well-meaning on their part, it can have a very devastating effect. Now, what this girl's response shows us in a very positive way is that she already has a sense of mastery, in that she already, even though she's met with a negative response, she's confident enough about her own question and her right to ask questions and to think of other alternatives and other questions. This shows that she's already developed a pretty strong sense of mastery. Lots of other kids, on the other hand, particularly young girls, would have been shot down by an incident like that.
Let me bring this back to helping women who have girls growing up and also teachers. For example, this teacher could have said something like, "That's a fascinating question. It's really not on the topic at hand, because we've already assumed and we know that the wheel is what was invented."
Right.
And that's
right.
What we're working on today. But it's so interesting when you come up with something that would give us a whole different view of even how civilization would have developed. And
right.
Maybe sometime we'll go back to that kind of question.
Well, this brings us to another topic, and that is how teachers respond to gifted kids. I think that question, and again, this may or may not be true, but that's the kind of interaction that can happen for a gifted child, where the gifted child is sort of thinking out of the box and comes up with something that's sort of on a different plane, and the teacher may not be prepared for it. And so, actually, as an aside, often gifted children get those kinds of responses. Yes, the appropriate response is to say, "Boy, that is interesting, but that isn't exactly what we were focusing on today, but wow, wouldn't that be interesting to pursue at another
right.
time?"
And, of course, if the teacher is given some help and support through workshops, I think most teachers can learn some responses, even if they're doing them somewhat on automatic pilot, that at least don't close out a kid.
Exactly.
And then,
exactly.
of course... Right, and then the women and the men who are teachers who have more inventive styles of their own may come up with even a more expansive answer. When we go to the library, I'll help you find a book
yes.
on it, or something like that.
But I think for the teacher, the core as far as resiliency goes, the core thing to remember is that you're wanting to reinforce the child's yearnings for a sense of mastery, and that your response shouldn't in any way be a punishment for that process.
Perfect. And the same thing we can translate to the parent. Even if you say to your child, I am so exhausted, I couldn't even tell you if 2 and 2 make 4 right now,
right. But
I just love when you come up with these great ideas.
Excellent. There was another aspect of that vignette that I wanted to address from the perspective of resiliency, in that the girl's ability to persevere and come right back, within that is an assumption that she does not have an over amount of emotional reactivity. Because if she was highly emotionally reactive, she would have not only been hurt by that, but she might have been hurt to the point where it impaired her ability to continue thinking about the topic.
But she did have some anxiety symptoms around her heart. And
yes,
these may, even that minor level of reactivity, again, it may depend on the support in the family. If she came from a family where parents have said things like, I had to give a presentation, my stomach was horrible, or my heart was pounding, but I did it because I needed to do it, and I, you know, and she gets a kind of message that you can live through these
exactly. Minor
symptoms.
Exactly, and that's very important because the sensitivity that the person has is to some extent physiologically related, and everybody has some sensitivity. However, the key is knowing that it's possible to continue to function, that you don't have to stop dead in your tracks. And I remember in doing therapy sessions oftentimes telling girls and young women that they don't have to stop talking when they cry. You know, that for some girls or people in general, having strong emotion stops the conversation. But that's not necessarily the case, that you can continue functioning and getting your point across while you're having a strong emotion. And that's the whole construct of impairment within the emotional reactivity, that you want to minimize, you're looking for minimal effect, minimal impairment, that it's fine to have a reaction, but you want to be able to continue functioning.
Right, and this is where it's so important to understand that even though a person may have a set point where, you know, she cries at the drop of a pin kind of thing, if she is encouraged that she can just keep talking and making her points and whatever, and an hour later she'll be eating an ice cream cone and having a great time,
right,
then she'll grow up believing this, and she will. You know, she'll enjoy
right. Her
ice cream all her life, so to speak.
Right. It's an important point. And getting back to the young girl in your book, she definitely seems to be on the right track in terms of manifesting sense of mastery and persistence, and yes, being hurt when given a sort of curt response, but being able to manage her emotional reactivity and not let it impair her ability
right. To
think forward.
Well, in fact, she is not totally pure at heart, nor are any of us. And I wonder if you'd like to hear a little later excerpt on how her classroom continues for her.
Absolutely.
All right. These last few weeks of school have been wonderful. Guess what? Miss Shannon got sick, and we have the greatest substitute. His name is Mr. Reed, and he is fun and nice. He told us he just finished becoming a teacher. I can't believe how different school has been. We made butter from milk by churning it by hand and had crackers and butter. We make candles with real string and melted wax. He brought us all jump ropes and taught us how to exercise using them outside. He has a rule that we can't play anything where we choose sides until the last kid is chosen, because it hurts feelings. He actually said that. I love him. And he always calls on me when my hand is up. 5 times so far he told me what a great answer I have. 3 times he said the question I asked was terrific. I am feeling so good. Goodbye, Miss Shannon. I'll never forget you, Mr. Reed.
That's right on target, and that's sort of a fantasy come true for a young girl who has been hurt and who has had a negative experience with the teacher. And basically, that story illustrates the contrast between how a teacher's response can be so different. And Mr. Reed, the good teacher, we'll call him, shows ways to nurture this young girl's sense of mastery, not hurt her feelings, not cause her to have to guard herself against emotional reactivity. And he presents as a person who's generally sensitive to the feelings of others and behaves in a way that that also would engender a sense of relatedness, and that is the ability to see others as trustworthy and as supportive. And again,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And that's the other aspect of resiliency that's so important, that that girls and children in general learn that at least in their environment, at least there are some adults, if not all, who they can trust to be reliable and safe and supportive.
I think that's so important. And again, when we take this, say, to a family, the family may have 2 or 3 kids. Maybe one is very talented, one isn't, one is having trouble in school. And the parent may really give a lot of mixed messages. Maybe there's some favoritism toward the kid that's talented. And what also this passage is showing is that kids pick up on everything, and Mr. Reed made himself trustworthy because when it came to sports, which had nothing to do with her inventing another thing instead of a wheel, he was fear. He didn't want that child, any child, to be the last kid picked and the humiliation that goes with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the standards we bring of a legitimate ethical position that we carry in every phase of our lives is being seen by our kids, and it's part of what we got too, you know, and our capacities for happiness are reflected by how safe we've been able to feel and that things are relatively fair.
Right. That's very important. And I think what your vignette shows are the qualities that this young girl has already developed, and it shows she's putting them into practice in her response to those around her, both positive and negative.
Right,
and,
right.
And you would also assume, and as she says, I remember you, Mr. Reed, as she encounters the positive adults and positive experiences in her life, she sounds like she's able to incorporate these, and they in turn become part of her positive approach to life and her resiliency.
Right, right. Well, I can't believe that our half an hour is almost up. It just flew by. I'm just in shock. I don't think we're done, you know. I'm thinking there's a third show lurking here with maybe a couple of more excerpts.
sounds great.
Yeah. But meanwhile, I want you to tell our audience, Sandy, what's new in your world of resiliency.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, let's see. My my scales, the resiliency scales for children and adolescents, were just published the end of 2006 and are now available for counselors and teachers and therapists to use. And they're available at Harcourt Assessment, Inc., and I am available to talk to people about resiliency and to consulting, and that's at the Resiliency Institute of Allenhurst, and I can be reached at 732-272-3773, and I can be emailed at sandraprince-embury@earthlink.net.
I don't know what happened, but your email got a little garbled, so just give that again.
Okay, it's Sandra Prince, all to one word, and then -embury@earthlink.net.
Very
good. And I'd be happy to respond to any with questions.
That's great. And I, again, am Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein. My major website is enchantedself1word.com. My blog is The Enchanted Self, which is on typepad.com. And I can be reached. You'll find ways on my website to write to me. I have a toll-free number, but don't use it if you have that cheap long-distance service that we often all have now. The toll-free is 877 the letter B, as in boy, joyful, J-O-Y-F-U-L. And I will just remind you that we've been reading excerpts and talking about resiliency. The excerpts are from my book, which will be available about April 15th, The Truth, My Secret Diary, I'm 10, I'm Smart, and I Know Everything. And for anybody interested in an advanced copy, or to sign up to receive an autographed copy as soon as it comes out, please, again, go to my website or feel free to telephone me. And we've been talking about happiness for women only, and you know we were all girls, so we couldn't be happy if the girls get sad. It's a whole long continuum. So thank you, Sandy.
Thank you, Barbara.
And we'll say goodbye for now and see us on the next show. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for listening to Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein's program, Happiness for Women Only. Our next live program is with Monica Coleman, 3:30 to 4, and Let's Talk Waterways. And that would be the end of the programming for today and live, but we always have our 06 pre-recorded programs that you're more than welcome to listen to. If you would like a hard transcript of this program, please go to http://internetvoicesradio.com. And under daily information, you'll find the name Deb Harris and her email. Please contact Deb. If you would like to hear this interview all over again, please go to http://internetvoicesradio.com, and it should be posted within an hour. Thank you very much for listening. Have a great day. And remember, keep smiling. Thank you, and have a great weekend. Bye-bye.